This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is The Promise of Tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of The Promise of Tomorrow.
Yes, yes, yes. It's great to be back with you again as we explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science and open innovation. Today we're going to have a visit with Dr. Vikram Appiah, maybe that's how he pronounced his name. I think it is, yes. He's technical lead at the Perception and Analytics R&D Labs at Texas Instruments in Dallas, and he's going to be making a presentation at the IEEE Metrocon Conference sponsored by Lockheed Martin and Encore, and you can learn more about that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you will see a link. Dr. Appiah is believes in higher efficiency, reduction in CO2 emissions, with improved quality of life with autonomous automobiles. And then in the second half of the program, we're going to hear from Diane Collier, who's going to tell us some updates and details on how the conference is coming. We're going to visit the Den of Strangers, visit our Fountain of Useless Information, and, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the Voice of Reason. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, we're going to go to the phones right now, and I want to introduce you to a technical guy that we've been chasing for a long time with Texas Instruments, Vikram Appiah. He's technical lead in the Perception and Analytics Research and Development Labs at Texas Instruments, specializing in automotive industrial robotics. And I think his subject at Metrocon is going to be autonomous automobiles, self-driving cars. Welcome to the program, Vikram.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on this show.
Now, you're going to be talking about autonomous automobiles, and this is something that we're learning more about all the time. And of course, Arlington, the city of Arlington, just introduced its self-driving shuttle. So, give us a preview of what you want to talk about at the conference.
Yes, so the talk I'll be giving is titled Sensor Fusion for Autonomous Vehicles. So the main goal of this talk is to introduce everyone with how TI is actually providing a path forward for improving safety in cars as we lead towards autonomy in vehicles. And a lot of the work that requires to be done to get to that point. So if you look at cars these days, you are seeing a lot of sensors being introduced. Like there are several cameras, there are radars, there are LIDARs, there are all these sensors. So I'll give an introduction of what these sensors are, why they are critical to the whole system, what are their drawbacks, what are their benefits, and try to come up with a narrative of how all of these comes together as we move towards a safer and more reliable autonomous vehicle environment in the future.
Yeah, my fiance just bought a brand new Subaru, and it turned out to be incredibly annoying because every time that she got close to the center line, it would beep at her, and so she finally had to turn that little feature off. But these are going to be important features with self-driving automobiles. Is that right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. She's doing something wrong, so the vehicle is warning her that she shouldn't be doing that. But what we are going towards is this is the first phase of introduction of these technologies to the customers. So as they get more and more comfortable, in the next phases, you'll see that the vehicle starts taking control over and make sure that you do not drift outside the lane. these technologies are being introduced gradually so that people become more comfortable and they get used to these technologies. And over time, I think it will make the roads much more safer.
Well, some of the things are really cool. I mean, the fact that she can put on her cruise control and it'll slow her down, and when she pulls back into a passing lane, speed her back up again to the speed that she was going. I mean, that's a feature we really like. But some of the other features, like crowding the center lane and the beeping constant, it was so annoying that we had to turn it off. Of course, if it's a driverless car, I guess those things are just really super important. And it's interesting, the Texas Instruments, which has been so much fun to watch all these years, to morph from being supplying tools for the oil industry to getting into high tech with Jack Kilby and the integrated circuit and, a rocketry and the moon program and a bunch of other things, is now staying right there, right where it should be in these driverless cars.
Yes, absolutely. I think Texas Instruments is it's such a diverse company that it actually has so many different products. There's so much really high-tech, innovative stuff going on. Texas Instruments has been working in the automotive industry for a few years now, several years in fact, and recently actually they released an announcement that Texas Instruments actually hit a mark of 150 million vehicles with products in them. So it's not that TI is new to this field. TI has been actively engaging in the automotive industry, and we are pushing forward the whole envelope of how far this industry can go.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. We did a feature story one time in Jack Kilby, a little biography thing, a video, as a matter of fact, that won awards. And we had a chance to talk and interview Rich Templeton and also a number of other people, some that are retired from Texas Instruments now, and they became good friends of mine. Jerry Merriman, who helped develop in fact, was principal in developing the handheld calculator, so it was pretty fancy stuff. When did you join TI?
So I joined TI 5 years ago, but I've actually been with TI as I was doing my grad school, as I was working on my PhD, I had the opportunity to come and work at TI for 3 summers. So my first introduction to TI was back in 2007 when I joined as a summer intern. I liked it so much that I came back twice, and finally after my PhD, I decided to come join Texas Instruments. And since then, I've been working with some really cool high-tech stuff here.
Yeah, you never had a chance to meet Jack Kilby. I believe he died in 2005 or maybe 2006, and I remember it very well. Well, anyway, you were talking about radars and LIDARs and IMUs, the inertial measurement units, and GPS, and we know what GPS is and radars. But tell us about LIDARs, LIDARs, and then I'm going to ask for an explanation of inertial measurement units. These are Greek to me.
Yes, so I guess let me start with a basic introduction of what the sensors are, right? So there are two different kinds of sensors. One is active sensors and the other is passive sensors. So passive sensors are, they don't emit their own signal, they just receive and, receive the signal and then make sense out of it. So a camera is a good example. It's just trying to capture whatever it's seeing. The light is either from sunlight or headlights, it doesn't emit its own energy. Versus radars or LIDARs you were referring to, or even the ultrasound sensors, the one that goes beep beep in the car these days, they're all active sensors, which means they emit their own signal out and they receive the signal back to make sense of the world. This is, in some sense, how bats perceive the world. They basically emit signals out. Once they hear the reflection back, they know how far they are. So LIDARs exactly are similar technology. It's called light imaging detection and ranging. So the idea is it projects light out and receives the light back, and it measures how long it took for the light to come back. So there's a laser, which is basically shooting pulses out to the world, and there's a motor which kind of scans the entire surroundings. And as it moves around, it constantly keeps measuring the time it takes, and depending on how long it took, it knows how far objects are. So if you've ever seen those autonomous cars that Google drives around, there's a big cylinder sitting on top. That's a LIDAR.
Okay.
Things are right now very expensive. They are well over $50,000, $60,000. and a lot of there's a lot of industry research going on to try and reduce the cost and make it feasible to put it on every car that's out there.
Okay, so a guy like me to understand it, we know radar, I think, is RF, radio frequency, and then LIDARs are light frequency, but it is not visible light, is it? Is it infrared or ultraviolet, or what kind of light is this?
It is infrared light, so it's not visible to the human eye, but it's a very high, so just like radars, it's a very high power light source that's being emitted to a single point. So it actually gets a very high signal reflection back. So it's actually much more reliable in some sense than the radar when objects are moving closer or further out.
Okay, and the did we cover an inertial measurement units? So what is IMUs?
So inertial measurement units essentially measure how your vehicle is moving. So it is like, are you moving really fast? Are you moving slower? It's essentially just a motion capture mechanism for the vehicle. Because as you're moving along the road, these other sensors are actually measuring how far other objects are. But that is relative to your own speed. So the IMU is responsible for identifying how you're moving. So there are a couple of different ways of measuring your motion. One is velodometry, which is just saying how fast your wheels are moving, what is the speed of your vehicle. But they are not as accurate as an IMU. So they give you a good ballpark figure, but IMUs are the real, very accurate sensors which are required to do some safety critical maneuvers on the highway.
Okay, so radars, LIDARs, and IMUs all working in tandem can give us reliable and efficient autonomous automobiles where an operator isn't necessary. Is that the point?
Right now, we are trying to improve safety, make sure that we go to a situation where we have zero accidents. The next step will be autonomous vehicles. So we are making our move towards that direction. So hopefully in a few years from now, we will have autonomous vehicles.
Well, of course, that was my next question. I mean, what's the fail-safe with this stuff? There's human error, which we're very familiar with. We've had that for millennia. But, machine error, we know all about that, too, because machines break down. They don't perform. Things can interfere maybe with the radars or the LIDARs or the IMUs or something else. And then all of a sudden, these things working in tandem get us in trouble. What's the fail-safe? Does the car just shut off?
No, I think, I guess you bring a very good point here. So the Society of Automotive Engineers, it's an international organization which has certain specific standards on what level of safety are required for different levels of autonomy. And they have named their levels of automation from level 0 to 5. Where level 0 is everything is being controlled by the driver and no one, there is no automation. And level 5 is the one where you're talking about no steering wheels and the driver is not even in the loop. And there are different requirements as you go along. And to get to a point of level 5, you need a high level of redundancy, which means you need multiple sensors looking in the same direction so that if one sensor fails, the other takes over. You need multiple processors, the brains behind all this processing, so that if one breaks down, the other is taking care of it. So I think all of this is, there is a huge society of engineers who are actually designing standards, making sure that all the companies comply by it, and we have safety regulations which we have to follow. Just to put that in perspective, some of the features that you were talking about, like automated cruise control, lane departure warning, all those are level 1, level 2 systems. So we have a few more things we need to chip away and make cars safer before we get to full autonomy.
Okay. Embedded sensor fusion, I think, is what we're told that TI is working on. And you say that the safety features are going to be redundancy. It's going to be not just one set that's ruling everything, but if something fails, something else will override. And that's the next stage that you have to go to because you're already at stages 1 and 2, and that's what you're working towards right now. Is that in a nutshell what you were saying?
Yes, absolutely. So I think one more reason to do that is these are we are talking about all of these sensors working in tandem in perfect conditions. What if there is rain, or what if there are conditions like dirt on top of the camera? So these are situations where you need other sensors. For example, radar is never affected by rain. Radar is great in rain. It's resistant to dust, and it has all these great features. So it's very important to have multiple sensors looking out in the world to make sense of the world. So if you look at these sensors, each has their own plus points and drawbacks. So an ideal system in the future will actually have all these sensors coexisting, working together in tandem, watching out for each other so that if one fails, the other takes over, and the whole system will have complete redundancy in all directions.
Okay, so what if two sensors start arguing with each other? which one wins?
So it depends on what the situation is. Typically, it's not about which one wins. It is only when two sensors agree that something is right or wrong will a decision be made. If two sensors do not agree, then that's a situation where the driver needs to take control. So in the future, when it does get to a full autonomous vehicle system, there will not be a situation where two sensors do not agree or they do agree. You'll need multiple sensors where you need a voting to make sure there are at least two sensors which are saying that this is the decision that's happening before a decision is being made.
Well, you're making us feel a whole lot better about this, I have to say. And you mentioned in your abstract that these autonomous automobiles, automation of transportation, will result in reduction in CO2 emissions. Is that because there'll be less need for cars on the road because they'll be called up on demand or something? How can you say this would be a reduction in CO2 emissions?
So I guess even before we get to a point where cars can be called on, when cars are all traveling in the same lane at the same speed, within the speed limits, no one is just jumping lanes, and so there is a lot less need for braking. There is lesser traffic jams. So as more and more cars become automated and they are more, they follow the rules better, we will see an improvement in the traffic situation. So that's the first step. And as we go forward, I think there will be situations where cars can be called on. That's basically called mobility as a service, where people don't own cars. They just are, just like how we do, how we call taxis or Ubers. Mm. You actually get cars called at you, and they can come pick you up, drop you wherever you want. You don't need so many parking spaces to hold on to all these cars. So that's, I think, a few years ahead in the future. But even in the next phase, in a few years from now, we will see improvement in traffic situations. We will see cars are following the rules and driving safely, and that will definitely improve fuel efficiency.
This is such a utopian view, and a lot of us can really welcome it, especially those of us who hate tailgating. And the guy that pulled alongside of me yesterday and cut me off so close that he almost clipped my front fender. And things like that will come to an end, and maybe road rage will disappear with it. That's kind of the utopian view, and a lot of us would welcome it, and that's what we have to look forward to.
Yes, absolutely. I think the humans are the most unpredictable part in the whole driving scenario. If you take out the human, the whole system will be much more predictable. But driving is something that's fun for people, so I'm sure a lot of people will be driving in the future. So we have to keep that in mind and make sure that these autonomous vehicles are self-driving cars coexist with human drivers and make sure that they follow the rules even if others are, cutting across or everything. Safety is the most important for some of these vehicles.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, humans are the most unpredictable equation in this whole thing, and so autonomous cars have got to be able to protect themselves from the human driver who is not in an autonomous car. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
That is really, really amusing. I don't know if it's amusing. It might be just plain great information. Okay, I'm going to ask you something else. This may not be an area you want to get into, but one of the speakers at the Metricon conference this year is a guy by the name of Mike McNair. He's with Bell Helicopter, and he's talking about vertical takeoff and landing automobiles. And when I spoke with him on this program, a few weeks back, I was asking him a lot of questions that he didn't have any answers for. But will Texas Instruments be involved with the sensors and the things that are necessary to be able to advance vertical takeoff and landing transportation, private transportation?
So I guess the way Texas Instruments, we are focused on cars right now, and all the sensors that we are building are making sure that we comply with the safety and follow all the rules and regulations for the cars. The great thing about the semiconductor industry or technology in general is when you solve a problem for one particular sector, it is very easy for another sector to come in, take advantage of it. So at some point, there could be situations where they actually take benefit of what TI is doing in the vehicle space, in the auto, in the ADAS and safety space. So that's probably where we see this moving forward.
Okay, one more big question, and that is cyber warfare. This country engages in it, and we are victims of it. And what can be done to protect our automobiles that are with these GPS systems and that sort of thing from being taken over by some diabolical person and causing massive pile-ups on the highway with these autonomous cars and jamming all of our traffic during very sensitive times?
So I guess that is a very, that's a concern that several people have raised, and the industry is very aware of it. There's a lot of research going on in that topic. There are going to be much more stringent safety regulations. Everything that goes out to the consumers will be vetted with several people making sure that none of these things happen. So while that is a concern, the industry is very committed to actually making sure that something like that does not affect the public overall. So when the cars will roll out with some of these features, they will definitely be much more safer. And that concern will be, it's just like the concern we have over self-driving, like autopilot and planes. It could be a problem, but so far the industry has being able to be one step ahead of all these people who are trying to cause problem, and we will hopefully avert that in the future.
Okay, well, you're making me feel better, I hope, but these are certainly very serious questions. Now, what do you want to be the takeaway? What have we missed? What if I ask you that you're going to want to drive home at the conference, and what's going to be the takeaway? What do you want people to leave there with?
The main takeaway is for people who are afraid of cars taking control is that there is a lot of push in the industry. Like, several thousands of people all over the world are working towards making these systems safer, and our goal is definitely to make the cars and the future of transportation a lot more safer. So hopefully when people walk out of my talk, they'll be more confident, and they'll be happy to actually try out an autonomous vehicle or a self-driving car in the future.
Well, Vikram, we're about out of time in the first half hour anyway, and when we come back, I'm going to ask you, how soon can some of these things happen? If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Yes, how are you? I'm a financial advisor, Dave Ramsey. things for which you would not take money.